What's up, y'all? Trevy of Trevy TV coming to you live on Memorex from the remote location, the ultimate remote location in a basement. Can you see the top of my head? I just woke up. Well, actually, I didn't wake up. I woke up a couple hours ago, laid in the bed, looking out the window, watching the snow, and decided to get up. You know how you lay in there and you're lazy, and you're like, then all of a sudden it kicks on, and the next thing you know, you up, wanting to get on that glider, get that workout, get that little sweat or whatever for a few minutes, get them steps in, get that body moving. Exercise is a drug to me now. I'm addicted to it. And then you say, hey, you've been trying to shoot video down there while you're on there. Go ahead and see how quick you can set that up. So you do, and you get down here. And if you see that backlight behind me, I had to set up some board, some cardboard and boxes really quick. And I started at like 1:30. I was supposed to work at 3. Actually, it was 1:50 by the time I got down here because I was moving cameras up. I don't know. I just wake up. You know, you wake up and you just start doing stuff and you feel good. You got energy. So, ooh, you start projects. So I moved one camera. I moved my Mevo camera to the other side of the room so it would shoot me and granddaughter when she on the bed. Then I had to wire that to an outlet. So I had to figure out how to, just for the, you know, for the power. And I got that done. It was kind of slick because I ran it down and out the door and into the living room, out of the bedroom into the living room, and found an outlet there and hit the cord. So granddaughter, it may take her a little while to see that wire, but I'm sure she'll see it. And, you know, I got that one set up. Didn't even use it yet. Grabbed this one downstairs, looking at the clock. How many minutes can I get in? Should I take a shower today? You know, all that fun stuff. Back here, Youngstown, Ohio, my hometown, all I do is work. That's not true. There's not a lot of time to do anything but work, but the car gets use every now and then. And I think I'm paying, you know, a sizable amount of money to have that car for these 2 weeks. And it's worth it.
It's worth it for the peace of mind. It's worth it to have that. I got to have that.
I'm that person now. I need that option. You know, I got to have, you know, that option anytime, anywhere. I got to be able to get up and go just to have that in my head. Even when I used to rent cars, when I was at home, when I didn't have a car, I'd rent a car because it was only like $30 for the weekend. You know, as long as you did 100 miles, under 100 miles a day. And for that price, $30 for the weekend, if that car set for 2 days, I got no problem. But when they upped the price, that's when I said, okay, can't do this anymore. And okay, I can't be here the whole weekend without a car, just in case. Just in case. During the week, back and forth to work on the bus. So anyway, long story, but interesting. But more importantly, talking while I'm exercising. The reason I'm going, because there's a good conversation going on right now. A good conversation got started when I posted the Jon Stewart interview. I saw the Jon Stewart interview on Stephen Colbert's show, and it was brilliant. To me, it was brilliant. He started off a little bit jokey, but it was just brilliant comedy. It was just good. And then the points he made just aligned with my thinking, and he did it in such a aesthetically pleasing way and articulate and just brilliant. It was just because it wasn't so highbrow and it wasn't so scientific and it wasn't scolding. It was a little bit self-deprecating, but it was self-deprecating in a way that it got his point across, you know, because he's a Jew. And he just, it was good. It was just good. And basically the whole point he says was, it's going to hurt, but we can't stop the conversation. You got to be able to say what you want to say. You got to be what you want to say. And good conversation came from that Facebook thread. I'll go upstairs I'll copy that whole thread.
Or, you know, my parts of it, I'll have to expand it. See more.
S-E-E space M-O-R-E, all the, you know, replies and stuff, and copy them, paste them in a notepad. Use find and replace to get rid of a lot of the, you know, metadata
and stuff that, you know, goes along with the thread. But,
you know, then I'll save it and post it, have it for, you know, my own purposes. Also, as I'm thinking, people, let me tell you, people, tip from Jeffrey TV. Go to your Facebook. There's a somewhere in there. I forget where it's at, but it's in there. You can download your Facebook history from day one. You can download your Facebook history. Everything you ever did or had or posted on Facebook, you can download. I've done it for a few years now. And I've been doing it to where I just get the whole thing, you know, go from day one, like 2009, all the way up to now, for a few of them. So I have that. So now I just go from like maybe 2 years ago. It takes a little, the file isn't as big. And, you know, it doesn't matter how long it takes, because, you know, you just do it and it just runs and it says, hey, it's ready. Come download it. You download it. I think I did mine with 15 gigabytes, I think, the big one. And then I just go from like 2018 or something. Like, no, not 2018, to 2020. I'll do an increment backup of it. But go get all that. Get all that. Download it to your computer so you'll have it in case Facebook decides to, you know, or if something happens. I don't even say, even if Facebook decides to do something, or if something happens to Facebook or something like that, or to your account, I got to have a backup. I got too much invested in that. And that kind of brings me back to the thread. Facebook just inspires me. The kind of conversation, I get inspired like none other than conversation. You know, I can think of a lot of good stuff in my own head. You know, there's a lot going on with me. And where I can just stay with them on my own head, but nothing. The triggers in Facebook, somebody say this or that, and it gets you. It just gets me going. And I stayed out of it for a few years. It got really tough when George Bush came in, but I hung in there. And then when Trump came in, it just got too vitriol. I don't know what the word is. It just got too bad. It was just too emotional and argumentative. And it was just toxic. Well, I don't want to say toxic, but it just wasn't. It was just too much. I was like, I'm done. I don't need it. Yeah, I'm going to go to Paris. I'm going to go to Egypt. I don't need this. Stuff like that. And just, you know, and I literally remember making a commitment to concentrate more on what I was doing and just let that go. Because it's just the conversation, it just fell apart. You couldn't have conversation anymore. But now it seems like we're getting back to it. And that the Kyrie and the Kanye stuff, I think, is contributing to something that could be a significant adjustment in the way we social mediaize each other. Because this is new to us and we are learning. And like I said a long time ago, When our parents got on Facebook and got chatting and all that, and back in the day when people weren't used to hearing other people's opinions, so freely flying around in a forum like social media, there may have been more respect for social media than social media deserved. Because to see it in print or to see it in writing or to see it like in an official interface mechanism or system or board or whatever, it may have gave, you know, a lot of people may have, people saying crazy stuff, but it's not crazy. It's just their opinion. And it was hard because I was an atheist. So I would come out and say stuff and, you talk about the backlash. People just weren't used to hearing other people's opinions. That's all it was to me. And they reacted as humans do in situations where they're unsure or, you know, they're not familiar with or inexperienced with. So I can't fault them for that. It bugged the hell out of me, but I kind of understood. Now, atheism isn't so, not taboo, but isn't so triggering anymore. In fact, it's not so triggering anymore that believers are asking for the same
What's the word? The same. It's okay. It's the word starts with A, I think. The same, you know, acceptance that we were asking, that atheists were asking 15 years ago. And so it was funny to see the tide change. They were saying things. They were saying, so a couple, it was what happened. It was a thread where two people said basically the same thing. It was, I respect your beliefs, blah, 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 but I'm allowed to have my own beliefs. And I was like, y'all didn't say that when I was coming out as atheist 15 years ago. And so, but that was good. And another thing about that too, the atheist thing, that made me speak out. For some reason, the atheist thing, I was triggered to speak out with that. I had a drive to speak out of it. I even got a website, atheistwalking.com, but that came afterwards. I had a drive. I was out there. I walked. Freedom from Religion Foundation had a little march. I went. I was just participating in stuff. I was going to the conventions. You know, I was involved. And a video I made went viral. And a lot of people think that, you know, that may have started the atheist revolution on YouTube, and which I think led to a lot of other things in the atheist thing. So in my mind, regardless, I feel I had an impact, and I'm good about that. I felt like I had an impact on something that I felt strongly about, and whether I did or not, or whatever impact that was, doesn't matter. Oh, I know I had an impact, but you know, how significant that impact was doesn't really matter, because I feel that mission accomplished. I did what I wanted to do. I got out there. I was heard. I was heard. There you go. I was heard. I felt like I was heard. And look, I'm going to get a tear in my eye, but I'll spin that all the way back around to this. I got to tie it to the poor whites and Trump. They're not being heard. Poor whites are not even on the radar. You don't hear any news about poor whites. But for the last 3 or 4 years, all you've been hearing about is black people, the plight of black people. Now, you ain't got to be a racist to hate on black people who getting all this attention. And you ain't getting none. I mean, actually, you don't hate on them, but, you know, it's naturally human to, you know, point the finger. And I kind of understand that. You point the finger, something aggravates you, you just growl. And then you reset and analyze the situation. What am I growling out? What do I want? And then you adjust. But that initial reaction, I can't fault. That initial reaction, if you're under threat, feeding your family, you're poor, you're not being heard, you're going to react to whatever's, and then you make it, I have even done this myself. I've made adjustments to where, I'm not mad at the black people, or I'm not mad at the white people. I'm mad at this that's stopping me, or I'm not mad at, you know, so-and-so. I'm mad at that, but whatever it is, that visual, that optic of black people getting all this and black people this and affirmative action that and give, I even heard they gave black people of color more money for stimulus. Now, I know that ain't right. I said, if I was a poor white person, I might go out and I would protest, or I was going to say something that might get this video banned on Facebook. I might go out and, you know, I personally would go out and do what I did. I'd get involved. I'd become active. And then I would try to make a impact on it like I did with atheism. But that's what the Trump situation was. And the Kyrie and Kanye thing, I'm not sure if I want to go into that deeply. But, you know, when I say that, I usually end up doing it. But the point about that I want to make is that I think conversation is beginning. I can see it may be in four. The conversation is, I don't like to use the word mature, but the conversation is definitely maturing. I don't like the word mature, never have, because it's like, to me, in my mind, mature meant when you're a certain age, you act a certain way. And that might, and I know that's an oversimplification, but in my mind, it was like, you're mature. You're 16, you're supposed to act this way. You're 17, you're supposed to act this way. And I've been told to grow up all my damn life. So you know what I did? I'm going to tell you what I did. Instead of growing up, I went out and I made my own. I became independent, and I tried to be. And I can almost say it with honesty that I would look at it and say, I'm going to act a fool and show my ass. But I'm going to do the part you want me to do so good and so better than anybody. You ain't going to be able to say shit about my extraneous behavior. And that's what I do. I go to work. I bust my ass. My performance is at such a level of respect. I get the personality, everything, that I can get away with stuff. Let's just face it. I can get away with stuff. I don't because my boss, she's on my ass. You know, every night and out, you know, we do favors. Everybody does favors. It's like Tomlin said, I treat everybody fairly. Mike Tomlin, Coach Pittsburgh Steelers, he said, I treat everybody fairly, but everybody doesn't get treated the same. And I was like, that's brilliant, Mr. Tomlin. That's brilliant. Speaking of Mr. Tomlin, the game Sunday, Cincinnati. I probably should, might go, but I need some downtime. But anyhow, the conversation, I think, is starting to get more nuanced and a little bit more mature, whatever that means. I mean, I know what that means, and it's probably the right word. I just don't like using it. And we're able to discuss, and we had a good discussion. A nice long thread, good discussion. And I think, and then I, you know, I took a little, oh, okay, here you go. Okay, you know, nice long thread, good discussion. Went for the morals, right or wrong. You know, this or that. And it was just good. It was good. And I was having it with people who took their time and didn't get emotional and, you know, thought it out when we discussed it. And it was really, really good. And then I asked the question, should we have white staff affinity groups at work? And I got a reply. And I looked at the reply and I really wanted to know why. I wasn't trying to argue. And I'm starting to realize that I'm really not trying to argue. I really want to know why. So I will ask the question in a very soft way. And so I asked why, and I got an answer. And then Sharon replied, and in her reply, in fact, she replied right under Kim Cashfield's reply, and that's the St. Louis crew. And I had just, speaking of Sharon Norv, I saw her live in concert for the first time. I hadn't seen her in 30 years. We used to be religions school religion classmates, and we sit by each other, so we, you know, we had history, so we were able to talk some. We had, you know, for like a whole year, we were able to, you know, converse back and forth, come back and forth, and, you know, have moments to share. And it, even before that, my father had a picture. I was like one or two. I didn't even know, because I it was me, her, and Kim in a picture, and I was like 1 year old, and I was like, is that Sharon? And Kim was like, yeah. I had no idea that I had known her before I knew her. But anyway, she did a concert. And I got to do a review on that, and I'm saving that. I want to do a review on that. But she replied, here's the thing. She replied, you know, about, she said, I said, no, she replied because of the, I guess, inequalities or something. She said something basically along the lines of existing inequalities or inherent inequalities. And I put, how or what are they? And then, you know, before she replied, I just Googled it. I said, well, you know, I think I Googled, what are the inherent inequalities? Just something blank like that. First website that came back was from the Smithsonian Institute, and it said whiteness. And I was like, whoa. You know, it just basically explained it. It explained it to the point to where it looked like a template for a lot of arguments I've heard. And I was like, oh, so this is where they're all getting their information from. Because it seems like a lot of these, you know, responses you get, they're getting them from the same source. I was like, oh, it's like a boiler template response for the inequalities of people of color in America. And I was like, oh, I heard this before. You don't even have to ask it. I said, I Googled it. I said, never mind. You don't have to answer. I Googled it. She said, what'd you find? And I posted the link. And then she came back. And here's the good part. She came back and said, oh, yeah. That's what DEI or something is for. And I was like, DEI? What is DEI? You know, I was like, what is DEI? I had never heard of it before. So I Googled DEI. And oh, Lord, have mercy. Diversity, equality, and inclusion, I believe, is a freaking industry. This may be the answer that I've been looking for a couple years now. Why is there so many women on TV? Why there are no white males on TV? And when the white male is on TV, he's a buffoon or a villain. Why are there so many interracial couples in commercials and stuff? And I'm not even going into the gay homosexual thing. That's the plight that just took off. And it's just, you could almost put that in a separate category compared to the racial and women thing, the racial and women thing. But it's kind of all put together. It's a freaking industry. It's like an $8 billion industry. And I Googled it. I Googled DEI industry, and I got a list of websites. I think the first one was from Harper's, and they went on to explain it how it's a... Put it this way. Let me just cut it. They explained it in a way that they criticized it in a way that I probably would. You know, I sided with the way they criticized the argument. I sided with the criticism of the argument that they made. And I don't know if that's right or wrong, left or right. There is no right or wrong. There is no left or right. But, you know, I'll still research it. But at the first point, first website I saw, I was like, oh, my God, they're questioning the same thing I am. It's an industry. It can even be like a cover that, you know, businesses invest in to make it appear this. And there's other, and the list, I went down the list of the websites that came back from the Google search. I even posted the Google search on my Facebook, and they, you know, studies done, does diversity work? Is this inclusion working? Is the boardroom being, you know, integrated? Blah, 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 blah. It was just, you know, commenting on the effectiveness of, the DEI and all this. Cause I'm looking around at, like I said 2 years ago, I'm like, why am I, every day am I getting an email about being black and getting help, or being a person of color and being help, you know, and getting help or assistance, or do you need a, you know, this, do you need support? You know, I'm like, this is, you know what? I could almost say this is making me uncomfortable. I could literally say that with truth.
Well, uncomfortable is a strong word because, as y'all know, not too much is going to make me uncomfortable. Come on. I mean, let's just be real. I mean, you know, if it comes to it, you know, I'm Jeffrey and I'm above everything. And that's the way I feel. If it's true or not, I don't care. And I don't know. But that's the way I wake up in the morning. I'm above everything. I'm responsible for everything.
So, but in the frame of picture, if I was a normal mortal, I could say I'm uncomfortable with this. I should be able to go to my employer and say, I'm uncomfortable with every goddamn time I open up an email from you. I'm here. The point of my blackness is brought up. Ooh, that is good. That is good. But see, I'm not like that. I am like that. No, I'm not like that. I don't think I'm that antagonistic anymore. I can tell I'm ready to retire. I'm coasting.
That's why it was probably easy for me to get out of the social media discussion controversy game. And, you know, I said many times before, I used to be in it and I used to be damn good at it. And I used to know how to trigger people without even triggering them. I was at the point where I could just post a blank. I was able to post a blank post or a reply comment at the right place at the right time to trigger people. That's how good I was. And I said, this ain't no fun no more. Y'all ain't no fun no more. Y'all too mean and too upset and too triggered by it. Come on, relax, Jesus. And then, so I stopped, and so I got back into it now. And I mean, it was good. It was just a good discussion. She posted that, and I Googled DEI industry, and I said, I freaking knew it. I knew it, because everywhere you look is women. You can't watch a goddamn movie anymore. There are no white male characters. There are no, number one, see, when you talk to black people, and my buddy called me yesterday, and we had our like maybe yearly conversation about, you know, what's going on, because he's a stout believer, you know, and I'm a stout atheist, but we've bonded on that. We come to a mutual ground on that, and we have a lot of similarities in our thinking. So we had a good talk yesterday. So I get his perspective, and he is one of us would say he's a trained militant. But he grew up in the, you know, very black, socially aware environments and situations and institutions. So his perspective comes a lot of times from black people. Black people is, you know, black people that, I don't want to say it that way, that sounded kind of condescending, but, you know, his perspective comes, you know, from the black perspective. And it could be just because he's not worried about anybody else. And that's, you know, fair. And not worried is a strong way to put it, but, you know, he's more concerned about black people. And I'm like, no, man, this is across the board, you know, about the emasculation, because they, a lot of people say the emasculation of the black male. I was like, it's not just the black man. Believe me, it's not just the black man. You know, but we both see the same point, I guess, is the idea. And, you know, it's nice to see. And I was like, where's all this coming from? Where's all this women and inclusion and mixed couples and all this coming from?
something is driving this. And I'm like, I know it ain't black people. I know black people ain't trying to get with white people. I know this for a fact, white people. Trust me. So I don't know why y'all pushing that, because we don't want it. And you know what's funny? Talk crazy if you want. My history shows, in fact, my history for the last 10, 15 years shows that I have dated almost interracially, almost exclusively. Well, it's not that I'm doing it exclusively, it's just that it turns out that it's across, I have, all my partners have been interracial. And most of them, not even American. So, yeah, and so it's not that I'm against the interracial couples. I'm against having it pushed in my face every goddamn time I see a commercial turn on TV and I look up and I see somebody. I'm like, that brother ain't going to be with her. That ain't the right kind. Y'all got to get the right kind. If you're going to do it, get the right kind. And I'm like, where is all this coming from? And it's an industry. I think it's like $8 billion or something. It's got to be more than that by now, because every company gets it. It's all on TV. It's like a coating. It's probably like a Teflon, you know, a coating, a shield. And I think that's what somebody described, a shield to protect themselves from the people that they employ or something. I forget how they worded it, but I was like, yes, yes, this is what I'm thinking. This one. And it was like article after article like that. And so, of course, if I see article after article like that, I'll have to turn around and go look and find articles supporting DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and see why they think it it goes. Just like I watch Fox News, and then I go to CNN. I can't tolerate MSNBC. It's too much. I mean, I'm open-minded, but MSNBC is just too much. I do Newsy. Hell, I even do those really right-wing ones, like Newsmax, or there's a couple up out there where it's just, I mean, there's a couple out there that are so right or what, right wing looking that you think that even I think they're racist. They just look racist. I mean, face it. We have a stereotype of what a racist looks like in our heads. Oh, no, I don't. I grew up with bunnies and rainbows on a beach where we just frolic naked all day. We don't even, we're beyond clothes. We're all one. No, 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 no. You know, we have been programmed, if not by television and media, to what a racist looks like. And to me, to break it down and probably to go too far into it, it's basically somebody who looks like their lineage hasn't been diverse, hasn't been mixed in a few generations. And you can look at people who just, woo, I can tell you ain't, but I take that back, because I know people from Europe and stuff whose lineage, I mean, the whitest Caucasian, these people so Caucasian, they ain't even white. I tell her, I said, you so Caucasian that you ain't even white. You was something else. And so, and I don't see the racial thing that I, in that person, but I guess if you give them a little bit poorness, or there's a look, come on people, there's a look. And so I watch some of those news places where you go, look, ooh, these people look racist. Ooh. But I still listen to them. You know, I still listen to them. But I can't take it, MSNBC. But so, and that's just my, you know, diversity of thought. But I don't know how I went down that track. I hope this is coming out. As you can see, I'm in the basement. Let me see how much time I done did. 17 minutes. I think I'm about halfway through. I think I could do like 30 down here before I need to go up and take a shower, if I take a shower today. And I think I will. I ain't going nowhere tonight. Tomorrow's the big day. Tomorrow I get a hotel. Granddaughter come home about 9. They probably get here about 9, 10 tonight. Hang out. Daughter and granddaughter. And then, you know, there's a parade. My cousin Lark, who making me chitlins. She making me chitlins. Taylor's having a parade. I'm going to go over there and see them. Hope I see my other cousin. Ain't seen Karen in a while. Oh, Karen's supposed to be making me green, so I gotta touch base with her. But the whole point, people, all due respect, the whole point is for me to get my ass into the hotel, shut the door, and just not have no contact with the outside world. Ooh, I can stop by Wedgwood Pizza. I gotta stock up on food. Ooh, I got food. I got candies and, oh, I'm low on potato chips. I think I got, yeah. Well, anyway, you know how I go to Sparkle. Well, I gotta get another friend of mine, potato chips. She wanted potato chips for me to send to her. And it was funny. She asked me to send her potato chips. I was like, what? What do you do what for you? But I didn't, you know, say that out loud. I was like, who? I don't do this for people. And then I remember she sent me Utz. She sent me some potato chips before. But I didn't ask for them. And I was like, and I, at the time, I was probably thinking, I'm going to have to pay for this. I'm going to have to pay for this. Because she sent them to me. And if she did because of that, it's brilliant. I got it. That's the, I'll give her one for that. If she did that just to get it, that's brilliant. I would just have to say, hey, you know, touche. That was, you know, excellent. So I got to go find her some chips and stuff and send it to her because she did that to me, did that for me. And hell, if I find them on Amazon and have them shipped, I know that don't, you know, promote the fellowship that we all tend to gravitate to, but, and if I have to pay like twice as much, so be it. But shipping potato chips shouldn't be that hard. And granted, I mean, daughter got tons of boxes around here, so that shouldn't be a problem. Oh, it's good. It's just good. Young son, Ohio, and I'm back. I don't go nowhere. I ain't seen nobody. I ain't seen Jesse. I ain't seen Brenda. I ain't seen Earl. I ain't seen Earl. Wow, I ain't seen nobody. Only person I see is the baby and all that is associated with granddaughter. Everything is granddaughter prioritized, and that's good. You know, everything is granddaughter prioritized. So, and that's the way it's supposed to be. That's the reason I'm back here. Oh, that's it. That's about 35 minutes. Damn. Another thing I like about myself that I'm into, I can get on this thing and do 30 minutes without even thinking about it. And it's not the physical. I'm in probably the best physical shape I've been in a long time, if not in my life. But it's the mental. To be on this thing for 30 minutes and not get all, you know, and not be all. My mother just texted me, please bring some Mr. Paul's cheese pockets. Every time I go in there, I look at those pockets too, because I know she like them. I went in there to get my butterflake rolls. And I think that's when me and Joe went in there and got the Steeler cookies and the Browns cookies. But anyhow, my name is Jeremy Scott Mitchell. It was nice talking to you. Swinging on y'all two times. Swinging on y'all two times. For me and for the funk. And for every elementary particle that has ever existed in any atom, in this or in any universe that has ever been, is or will be the totality of it all. An idea of all as one. A theory of universe, which includes no censorship. We need to talk it out. You can't suppress. Suppression does not work. You can't suppress. You can outlaw. That's different. You can make laws, that's different. Free speech is protected. So we're not talking about, the censorship I'm talking about is not on the state level. And that makes it almost more kind of scary because, what am I looking at? Oh, it makes more kind of scary because it's an ethereal, spooky kind of trendy, probably easily triggered optic. Anyhow, my name is Jeremy Scott Mitchell and I'm out. I hope this comes out.